Your eyes and your vision are under attack, damaging blue light from the sun. Your phone, your computer, your tablet, even light bulbs and car headlights is constantly bombarding you. The good news is our eyes actually already have a line of defense to counter the effects of blue light. This defense is made up of three pigments called carotenoids. MacuHealth with Micromycel, the only supplement with the exclusive patent on all three macular carotenoids and Micromycel technology.
Do your patients know what presbyopia is?
There are people who are afraid of the press.
Have you talked to your patients about multifocal contact lenses?
I've heard the bifocal, but not
right,
multifocal.
Exactly.
Do you need help with your multifocal strategy? Learn more at the conclusion of this episode. With more screen usage and indoor time, myopia, also known as nearsightedness, is increasing and getting worse in children. Now, certified eye doctors can prescribe MySight One Day, the first and only FDA-approved soft contact lens to slow myopia progression in age-appropriate children. Visit CooperVision.com to find a Brilliant Futures certified eye doctor near you. Welcome back to part three of my interview with Patrick McCowan, author of The Breathing Cure. In part three, Patrick discusses techniques to improve breathing, including kids and athletes. If you're new here and you like our interviews, press like, subscribe, share, and hit the bell. Also, please leave comments. Be sure to watch our full-length documentary, Open Your Eyes, on Amazon Prime, Apple TV, iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube movies and shows. So I think we've pretty well established what healthy breathing is, what unhealthy breathing is, what the symptoms are. Now, we have a patient or somebody who has established that their breathing is a problem and they want to improve on it. So we want to talk about exercises, but I want to go back to the taping first. We talked about the MyoTape, and people could get that at myotape.com.
Right. Yes.
Now, there was a time, and I don't know if it's still advocated by people like yourself, where the whole mouth was taped, and people, you know, you would practice, you know, you'd walk around the house for 20 minutes with a tape to see if you could do it. And then you'd go to sleep with the tape on to try to improve your, so you become a nose breather. Talk about that micro pore tape that maybe you could get in the, in a drugstore, tell me about tape. How important is it that people do tape? When would someone tape? When wouldn't you tape?
Sure. If you wake up with a moist mouth in the morning, you don't need to tape, because a moist mouth in the morning is a pretty good indicator that you are breathing in and out through your nose during sleep. But if you're waking up with a dry mouth in the morning, it's important that you have some sort of support to help ensure nasal breathing. Now, for years, we were using 3M 1-inch micropore tape, and it really served the purpose. The problem that we had was with children. A lot of the kids coming in, they're coming in for orthodontic reasons, they're coming in with asthma, they are chronic mouth breathers, and we couldn't be putting tape across their lips. So in actual fact, the MyoTape was developed for children specifically. We use it as a training aid so that children, when they are distracted, we have them wear the tape, so that if they were watching television or if they were on a phone or whatever, and if they forget to breathe through their nose, if they open their mouth, the tape, because it's elasticated, will pull their lips together to remind them to breathe through the nose. See, the thing about nose breathing, why would a child or an adult mouth breathe? There can be a couple of reasons. They could have a nasal obstruction. They could have rhinitis. They might have a deviated septum. For an adult, they may have nasal polyps. For a child, they may have enlarged adenoids. A doctor will treat the nasal obstruction, but that doesn't guarantee that the child or adult will actually breathe through their nose. Because the second thing that you need to look at is the behavior. And if a child or an adult have been mouth breathing, pretty much, you know, commonly mouth breathing or chronically mouth breathing for a period of more than 6 months, they have developed a mouth breathing habit. So while we want to decongest the nose, and we can do that with breathing exercises, and of course with whatever medical intervention, but we also need to change the behavior of mouth breathing. And that's very important. So the MyoTape was for changing the behavior of mouth breathing during wakefulness. And once we could ensure that the child was able to breathe through the nose, Then we had the when they were over 5 years of age, wear myotape during sleep. Now, some adults were also apprehensive about taping across their lips. People with anxiety and panic disorder, and as a result, then a tape that surrounds the mouth is a little bit easier digested. But for adults, if you're relatively healthy and if you haven't drank alcohol, you know, if you're able to breathe through your nose, you could use anything in terms of like the 3M 1-inch micropore tape is very accessible, it's very cheap, and it works pretty well. The only thing that I would say is there was a study that looked at mouth taping. It was organized by Harvard Medical School. And they taped a group of individuals with obstructive sleep apnea from mild, moderate to severe. They found that when these individuals were taped right across their mouth, it increased the AHI, which is the measurement of sleep apnea severity, in 1/3 of those people. And the reason being was due to mouth puffing. So then I was trying to figure out, well, what is mouth puffing? Of course, we all know what mouth puffing is. We can see it. You know, it's when that's mouth puffing. And I got onto my cross trainer and I kept on ramping up the speed to the point that I couldn't sustain nasal breathing anymore. And there's a point at which the air hunger gets too much that the air has to leave the body through any way it can, and it leaves the body through the mouth. And then I said, now I know what mouth puffing is. Mouth puffing is when the individual is breathing and that their need to breathe is so much that they're not able to sustain nasal breathing, that they have to breathe out through the mouth. But if their mouth is taped, it prevented mouth puffing and it made their sleep apnea worse. And the thing about my myotape was we were lucky. I was lucky with it. It allows mouth puffing, but that wasn't designed that way. We were just lucky. So it's safer. It's safer for moderate to severe sleep apnea. And that's it.
I also found it interesting that nasal breathing increases melatonin, which actually helps you sleep. So
yes, yes. And I forget the whole ins and outs of that one. So yeah, I can't comment on much further than that. So sorry about that.
Well, let me ask you about the belt, the Buteyko belt. Tell me about that and how does that help?
Dr. Buteyko, when he was working with his patients, he used to have them wear a sheet across their midriff, he used to get them to get a bed sheet, and to fold it in a way that the sheet was exerting a pressure against their breathing to help minimize or to reduce their breathing by, say, 20%. Now, a sheet is quite difficult to get it right and, you know, tying the knots and all of that. So that's why I developed the belt. And the belt, there's a couple of things with the belt. One is that it brings in awareness. So say, for example, this is the belt here. If you haven't seen it, it's elasticated. You put it around your midriff. So you put it around the area of the diaphragm and you're breathing into the belt. So it brings awareness to this area here. I can now feel where my breathing is. And I can just sit there, but I can have it underneath my clothes and I could be breathing against the belt. But the other thing about the belt is that it's exerting a slight pressure and resistance to my breathing. And by breathing against resistance, it's helping to develop the respiratory breathing muscles, including the diaphragm. So both the function and the strength of the diaphragm can be improved because of the extra load by the belt. And
can you get that at myotape.com?
As far as I know, you can. You'll definitely see it on our websites, buteykoclinic.com or oxygenadvantage.com.
And so what's the feedback when you're wearing the belt that you know you're doing it correctly and the feedback that you're doing it incorrectly?
Well, what we're looking to do is, you know, if we look at breathing, there's two main aspects that we look at. One is whether you were breathing high or whether you were breathing low. If you feel while you're wearing the belt that you're pushing the belt outwards, when the belt is down around your lower ribs. So as you breathe, you're looking to push the belt outwards. That indicates that you've got lateral expansion and contraction of the lower ribs. And the second aspect of it is that you're softening and slowing down your breathing due to the resistance imposed by your breathing. And the objective there is to feel a slight air hunger. So there's two different dimensions of breathing there. One is the slight air hunger is the biochemical dimension of breathing, and the air hunger is signifying that carbon dioxide is increased in the blood. And the fact that you're breathing low with lateral expansion and contraction of the lower ribs, then you're targeting the biomechanical dimension of breathing.
Excellent. Now, how about high altitudinal breathing training?
Yes.
Tell me about that, and you think there's a benefit to that?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty much in no doubt. And we've had quite a few people using our techniques in preparation for Kilimanjaro. So there's a few different things. At sea level, atmospheric pressure is 760 millimeters of mercury. Oxygen is 21%. As we ascend, oxygen is still 21%, but the atmospheric pressure is less. So we have 21% of a lesser figure. When we ascend altitude, our breathing muscles have to work harder due to the drop of atmospheric pressure. So there's a greater demand on the breathing muscles at altitude. Number one is because of the drop in atmospheric pressure, because air will gas will travel from areas of high pressure to low pressure. So if the atmospheric pressure is reduced, the breathing muscles have to work harder. Number two, at altitude, we're taking in less air. They're taking in less oxygen. And as a result, then we're more likely to be hypoxic. So how would you prepare for altitude? I would say get your everyday breathing good. Improve your respiratory muscle strength. How might you do that? Do physical exercise breathing in and out through your nose. You could also use the likes of the Buteyko belt and things like that as a support. When you breathe in and out through your nose during physical exercise, your nose imposes a resistance to your breathing to add an extra load onto the diaphragm. By having a stronger diaphragm, you're less likely to have diaphragmatic fatigue at altitude. So you want to strengthen your breathing muscles, but you also want to improve the function of your breathing. If you're at high altitude and you're breathing mouth fast and shallow, you waste a lot of air to dead space. And there was a paper by Bilo or Bilo, Bilo. He looked at two different groups of individuals. They were at an altitude of 4,500 meters and 5,400 meters. Their blood oxygen saturation was 80%, severe hypoxia. He had them slow down their breathing to 6 breaths per minute without increasing minute volume. So slowing down their breath, reducing the respiratory rate, allowing the tidal volume to increase proportionately, but not breathing more air. That was the key. So it kept minute volume the same. It increased their blood oxygen saturation from 80% to 89%. So there's a few things with this. One is get your everyday breathing right at sea level. So therefore, you will be better able to cope with the demands of high altitude. But number two, while at high altitude, bear in mind that there is a way to breathe economically. And if you are breathing mouth fast and shallow, you're leaving a lot of air in what's called dead space. The area of the nose, the throat, the trachea, the bronchi, and the first 16 branches of airways. So, to enhance gas exchange, always think about breathing nose, breathing slow, breathing low. Now, I do understand, of course, at altitude, the air is thinner. You will have a need to breathe more, faster breathing. But at the same time, slow it down relative to how you feel you need to breathe. Because the slower the respiratory rate, the less air lost to dead space.
And you always hear about sports teams that practice at high altitude, so they're going to play in a
Yes.
big game.
Yes. And the reason being is because, especially if it's the live high and train low model. So at high altitude, you're exposing yourself to less oxygen. And this in turn is going to cause the body to make adaptations. One of those adaptations is that the kidneys and the liver, to a lesser extent, become hypoxic. And because of the reduced oxygen to the liver and kidneys, it synthesizes a hormone called the erythropoietin or EPO, EPO. And EPO will stimulate then the maturation of the red blood cells, which in turn increase oxygen carrying capacity. So, in other words, if you're at altitude, your body senses that there's a deficiency of oxygen. And your body then will make adaptations to be able to cope with the drop in oxygen. Now, when you then come down to sea level, if your body has adapted, now you're at sea level with a better oxygen carrying capacity, which in turn is going to influence VO2 max, and you're less likely to fatigue. So that would be one reason in terms of athletes why they train at high altitude. Another one is spleen contraction, but probably the main one is the adaptations due to the hypoxic stimulus.
And if you breathe properly, the spleen will make more red blood cells, right?
It's true, your spleen releases red blood cells. Yeah, we have a kind of a, it's a, the human body is amazing, you know.
I
We
believe.
have a blood bank there that contains 8% of our red blood cells. And in times of additional oxygen demand, the spleen will release red blood cells into circulation. And you can stimulate the spleen to release red blood cells into circulation by doing breath holds. So some of the athletes, what I have them do pre-competition, if they're having a game, first of all, I'll do breathing exercises to get them into a better state of mind, that they're not too relaxed, but they're not too stressed either. We want to have them slightly stressed, but not too stressed. And during their warm-up, I would have them breathe nose, breathe slow, breathe low. This is about down regulation, about calming the mind, improving ventilation, improving alveolar ventilation, gas exchange, etc. Then during the warm-up, 10 minutes into it, I'll have them do two easy breath holds. And then I have them do five stronger breath holds to open up the airways, to increase blood flow to the brain, to put them into a more sympathetic state. But also, when you do a long breath hold, the thinking mind quietens. It's kind of strange. When you do a long breath hold, your mind becomes quieter. But also, the long breath hold, it causes the spleen to contract. And red blood cells then are released into circulation. And they are carrying oxygen. So you can increase their oxygen carrying capacity. Now, how long does it take for the spleen to reabsorb that red blood cells back? We don't know for sure. It could be an hour, but it could be less.
And anything specific for sprinters or long distance runners, as far as breathing goes, any techniques or tricks for them?
Yes, like I was working with a number of sprinters from Notre Dame back in 2016, 400 meter sprinters. And they were doing some of their 400 meter sprint practices with their mouth open. That's how they normally trained. And then I had them do 400 meter sprints with their mouth closed, which is quite tough. And I would only say to do it with highly trained individuals. And then other times I stood on the 360 meter line. They would sprint the first 360 meters with their mouth closed because I'm forcing their body to do the same exercise with less ventilation to get adaptations. But on the 360 meter line, they had to hold their breath. So, in other words, they're sprinting the first 360 meters, breathing in and out through their nose. At 360 meters, they breathe in, breathe out to hold their nose, and they sprint the last 40 meters with a breath hold. So what I did was I added a breath hold the last 10% of the race because this is when fatigue is setting in. Now, the reason for doing that is that I want to provoke a hypoxic, low oxygen and high carbon dioxide environment. And this in turn can cause the buffering capacity to increase inside the muscle compartment, which in turn can delay lactic acid and fatigue. But there's also a psychological thing. Breathlessness is uncomfortable. And we as human beings, we have a primordial fear to suffocation. And oftentimes it's the feeling of suffocation or breathlessness that will hold the individual back. I add an extra load of breathlessness or suffocation to the person to cause them then to be able to cope with the challenges that they would expect during competition. So that was one way. Now, we also use the basics stuff as well. I had these athletes taping their mouths at night. And you know, some of these athletes, they were only kids, they were youngsters, 20 years of age. One of them in particular was having to get up to go to the bathroom once or twice during the night. And that's not a good sign because you know then that his sleep was disrupted, you know, to get up to go to the bathroom. And by taping them out, he didn't have to get up to go to the bathroom. He had deeper sleep, waking up feeling more refreshed. And that's going to impact concentration. So you're working at improving sleep. You're also wanting them to have absolute focus and concentration that regardless of whatever happens on that day, that they have all of their energy and their cognition devoted towards the race. Because very often it's a mental game as well. And then from a physiological point of view, we're improving functional breathing patterns, but we're also adding extra demands by putting breath holds into their race so that their body is better able to cope with those demands.
MacuHealth, your science-born and tested solutions for visual performance, macular degeneration, and dry eye syndrome. New products coming soon. Embrace the science.
And how about for our hikers that are watching, people that are hiking up, you know, they do that as, you know, as a hobby or as for sport. They're hiking, you know, up maybe 11,000 feet. What kind of breathing should they do as they're hiking up? Should they change their breathing? Can they nose breathe the whole time as they're hiking up these big mountains?
See, a person's ability to nose breathe is going to be influenced by a couple of factors. One is their Bolt score. You know, if they have a decent Bolt score above 25 seconds, they're better able to cope with breathlessness, or at least they won't be as breathless when they do physical exercise. Versus if you can imagine somebody with a Bolt score of 10 seconds, they're not going to be able to hike anyway to that level. They won't have the energy to do it. So Bolt score is one. Number two is nostrils, nasal, and we use nasal dilators. I don't have one to show you, but we have little plastic devices we put into the nose that's based on the Cottle maneuver. And that helps to open up the nasal airway to make for easier breathing. We don't always expect people to breathe in and out through their nose during physical exercise because there's a point during physical exercise at which the air hunger gets too much, that mouth breathing is inevitable. Now, it's thought that that point switches at about 35 to 40 liters of air per minute. But what we would say is, don't switch automatically from nose-nose to nose-mouth. Sorry, to mouth-mouth. Go with nose-nose, in through the nose and out through the nose, but breathe nose slow and low to improve alveolar ventilation so you have a better gas exchange. And then when the air hunger gets too much, breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth to get rid of the increased carbon dioxide to alleviate air hunger. And then if the air hunger is not alleviated, then go to mouth-mouth breathing. The thing with mouth-mouth breathing is that it will also induce dehydration. When you're breathing through your mouth, there's a 42% greater water loss. So if a hiker has to carry their water on their back, well, if you're breathing in and out through your nose, you're going to conserve moisture. Anybody can check this. You can get the screen of your mobile phone and you can simply put the mobile phone screen underneath your nose and you breathe onto it. Now, automatically, that will tell you which side of the nose is congested more than the other. But also, you see the moisture that's lost from nasal breathing. And now, Dr. Galb, is to do the same breath but through your mouth. Breathe onto the phone with your mouth. And look at the moisture that's left behind. So when you breathe out through your mouth, you can literally cover the screen with moisture. And when you breathe out through your nose is... So the human nose is not just about moistening and warming and conditioning the air coming in, but the human nose is about recovering the heat and moisture from the exhaled breath. So I would say to people, of course, when you start doing physical exercise with your mouth closed, the air hunger is more, it's higher. But the more you continue to do your physical exercise with your mouth closed, your body makes adaptations to tolerate a higher pressure of carbon dioxide in the blood. And as a result, then the air hunger diminishes. So initially, in the first 4, 5, 6 weeks, the air hunger is more, but then your body adapts because you've trained your body to do physical exercise with less ventilation. And it's a very positive thing, you know. And I think, like, I've often wondered, like, why has there been so little research on this? Because it just doesn't make sense. Our mouth is not for breathing. Our nose does all the work. Now, there is one doctor who is doing research. His name is Professor George Dallam, D-A-L-L-A-M. He's from Colorado State University. He's worked a lot with high-level triathletes in the United States. And in 2018, he did a study of 10 recreational athletes. He got them to breathe through their nose exclusively for 6 months. And then he tested them with nose breathing versus mouth breathing. With nose breathing, they were able to achieve the same work rate intensity as with mouth breathing. But they had reduced fraction of expired oxygen. Their body was better able to utilize oxygen. Their respiratory rate with nasal breathing was 39 breaths per minute. With mouth breathing, it was 49 breaths per minute. With nasal breathing, they needed 22% less ventilation. So you can imagine an athlete having to do the same exercise intensity and duration, but with 22% less ventilation. There's a saving there in terms of economy. It's very important because the body, it was interesting. He got his athletes breathing through their nose for 6 months before they did the study, because the body then has adapted to nose breathing. You don't necessarily need 6 months. I would say 2 months would do it. But you can't just get a group of athletes and say, right, lads and girls, today what we're going to do is I'm going to have you nose breathe during exercise and I'm going to test you. The results are going to be terrible because you've introduced something so dramatic that their body hasn't got used to and it's going to hold them back. So at the start, always expect there's going to be a degree to which there's a step back before you go forward.
In your book, The Oxygen Advantage, there's 26 breathing exercises. Give us a couple. I like the one with the book on your belly, but give us some breathing exercises that people could try at home that are watching this. Obviously, go and get the breathing cure and the oxygen advantage, but give us some help with some exercises.
Sure. If you're feeling very, very stressed and you've got labored breathing and you just can't think straight, this is your emergency exercise. Breathe in through your nose, out through your nose, pinch your nose and hold your nose for a count of between 3 and 5 seconds. 3, 2, 1, let go, breathe in through your nose, and now just breathe normal for about 10 to 15 seconds. And again, take a normal breath in through your nose, out through your nose, pinch your nose and hold. 3, 2, 1, let go, breathe in through your nose, and breathe normal for 10 to 15 seconds. If you feel comfortable with 3 seconds, increase it to 4 seconds or 5 seconds. That's an emergency exercise. A tremendous little exercise when the mind is so agitated. Because when the mind is agitated, you don't want to meditate and you don't want to do a breathing exercise that involves slowing down your breathing. If you're feeling stressed, so say for example, you're going into a meeting, but don't wait until the meeting. Start off with small little things. You can't get into your laptop. You know, it's not firing up quick enough. You can feel that you're getting a bit frustrated. Bring your attention onto your breathing. Take that soft breath in through the nose and a really relaxed and a slow and a gentle breath out. Because when you have that slow, relaxed, gentle breath out, your body is telling the brain that you are safe. Now, I've used that in many, many instances, even going out to do public speaking because it can be unnerving, or going out if I have a television interview. And if I feel that my heart rate is too high, I'll automatically start slowing down my breathing to bring down my heart rate because I don't want to hyperventilate going into a challenging situation. If I hyperventilate, my brain doesn't want me to go into that situation. My brain wants to get out of that situation. I'm going into a fight or flight response. So whenever we get into a difficult situation, don't hyperventilate. Pay attention to your breathing. Simply, nobody sees anything. That's the beauty about this. There can be turmoil on the outside. You can be bringing your attention inwards, a soft breath in through the nose, and a really relaxed and slow, gentle breath out. I'm working with somebody with chronic fatigue at the moment. I had a session with him yesterday. His autonomic nervous system is in a very, very poor state. And all I want is, I want him to continuously throughout the day for a few minutes here and a few minutes there for his body to tell the brain that he is safe. Because when we have a chronic condition, there can be anxiety of the mind, our breathing pattern can be labored, and all it's doing is feeding into the condition itself. If your nose is stuffy, you can simply do this exercise. Now, don't do it if you're pregnant. Don't do it if you've got cardiovascular issues or any serious medical conditions. But if your nose is stuffy, you can breathe in through your nose, out through your nose, hold your nose to stop breathing, and walk 10 or 15 paces holding your breath. And already I can feel my nose is opening up a little bit there. Because if you're talking a lot, you might notice that talking makes the nose stuffy. Not for everybody, but for some people. So whenever your nose is stuffy, you can do that exercise. Now, maybe if you're not comfortable with holding your breath for 15 paces, do it for 5 and just see how does your body respond. Because when you hold your breath, it induces a sensation of air hunger or suffocation. And people with panic disorder and anxiety, they can be terrified of the fear of suffocation. So in other words, if you do have a predisposition towards anxiety or panic disorder, dip your toes into the water. Hold your breath for 5 paces. How do you feel? Do you feel okay? Yeah, I feel okay. Wait a minute and hold it for 7 paces. But anytime you want to decongest your nose, hold your breath after an exhalation. If you want to breathe low, I think an easy way to do it is actually standing up. You know, and you simply have your hands either side of your lower ribs. And as you're breathing in, you're just gently guiding your lower ribs outwards. Now, the reason that I have the hands on my sides are, see, the problem with putting the hand on the belly is you could be pushing and pulling your belly irrespective of your breathing. So that's why belly breathing mightn't be the best instruction. Because I want my clients to have their hands on their sides, and I want to see when they breathe in softly and silently through their nose, can they push their ribs outwards? Because if they can push their ribs out, it's a gauge of the generation of intra-abdominal pressure. And intra-abdominal pressure is influenced by what's called the zone of apposition. So it gives me some feedback of how well they are breathing from a biomechanical point of view. Another breathing exercise, the one that I think is really good, is simply going for a walk or doing your gardening or doing whatever you do with your mouth closed. And the ironic thing is that people very often just switch to mouth breathing because it's easier. But easier doesn't mean that it's better. You have to think there's nothing in your mouth that does anything with breathing. Before sleep, okay. I released a few guided audios as well that are out on YouTube. They're on Spotify and things like that. Say, for example, somebody wakes up at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning and they're lying there. They're not quite awake enough to get up, but they're not quite tired enough to go back asleep. It's almost that they're kind of in limbo. And it can be a frustrating time because the mind is running all of this stuff through the head. And at the same time, you're thinking, well, I need to be up at 6 o'clock in the morning. And if I don't go back to sleep, I'm going to feel absolutely lousy when I wake up. And of course, then you're not going to fall asleep because now you're getting worried. It's not easy to do breathing exercises at that time. I know that from myself because there's, of course, any of us can wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And if you're lying there and you're slowing down your breathing, it can be difficult because it's almost that the mind has got a life of its own. Listen to an audio. So what I did was I put together 20-minute audios and you listen to the audio. It's designed to guide you into relaxation with slow breathing to bring you back to sleep. And it works. That's free. That's a breathing exercise. I've also got a free one for kids doing exams because again, sometimes children and teenagers, nobody's really talking about concentration and developing the mind that they can hold their attention, talking about their sleep, talking about what they can do if they're feeling stressed going into an exam, because I was that kid going into an exam. And I don't think I got the grades that I deserved, not because I didn't have the ability to get those grades. It was just because my physiology was letting me down. So we also have pre-concerts for musicians, for athletes. We have a lot of free stuff that people can do. That's the thing about breathing, you know. There's a lot of free stuff online. And like part of my motive has been really, I have a kind of, even though this is my occupation, of course, and I make my livelihood from it, but I have such a, it was my personal journey first that got me into breathing. And at the start, I was writing books back in 2003, Close Your Mouth and different books to kind of get the information out there. But now people like apps. So last year, what we did was I funded an app. It's our own app. And we put a lot of work into it. We put a lot of money into it. And the app is free. Everything inside the app is free. There's no subscription. And the app is literally taken out of my head. If you have anxiety and panic disorder, you put it into the app and it gives you exercises to suit you.
What's the name of the app?
Oxygen Advantage. If you have sleep disorder, breathing, you put that in. If you're in the office, if you're sports, if you're asthma. And like I put $150,000 into the app now. I have to say, if I thought it was going to cost that much, I wouldn't have started. But what happened was I got a quote for $30,000 starting off. And the developer cost, we started getting more and more ideas. And we were so far into the app, I couldn't pull out. So I had to keep going with it. So yeah, I just decided. And I didn't want to do a subscription because what I wanted to do is I wanted to kind of put it out there because breathing is very powerful, but still there's only a small segment of the population that fully understand it. So yeah.
Patrick, one more thing. Talk about the Iceman, Wim Hof, and his breathing techniques, and what do you think about what he teaches?
I think he's a very interesting individual. He's performed some amazing feats. He is an extreme athlete, and his breathing technique, you know, always when I think about any techniques, I always think about the personality of the founder, and the personality will always trickle down to the technique. So what does it involve? It involves 30 big full breaths, hyperventilation, whereby you get rid of a lot of carbon dioxide. And then you stop breathing, and you stop breathing for a long time because you don't feel the sensation to breathe. And your blood oxygen saturation in the first round may drop down to the mid-80s. And then you breathe in and hold for 10 seconds, and then you hyperventilate again, you repeat it. It's a stress breathing exercise that's going to cause your body to make adaptations. I'm just a little bit weary with regards to the degree of stress that we put students under. And the only reason being, whether it's hyperventilation or breath holds, both of those will cause stress. Now, stress can be good when it's correctly dosed. It causes the body to make positive adaptations. But if the stress is too much for the individual, it can go the opposite way. And I've made mistakes with stress or exercises because we teach long breath holds. And I've put people into panic attacks. I put people into anxiety. I've had people coming in with chronic fatigue syndrome, even though they were athletes. And that's why I had them do the stressor and I completely floored them. And the thing about working with people over 21 years, you start to realize that breathing is pretty powerful. I don't think we can have a breathing technique that's for everybody. I think people have to be very careful with the stressor exercises because those are the exercises that can have negative effects. And I have seen people with hyperventilation and breath holding, not my own students, but people who might have, say, looked at it online, and not necessarily Wim Hof either, because there are other techniques that involve hyperventilation and breath holds. Never do it before getting into the water. There's plenty of episodes and unfortunate situations of people drowning. I've seen people get shingles as a result of it, adverse cardiovascular reactions. One facial tics, a student that watched this video about 2 years ago, and one of our own instructors is helping him in his recovery. He's got uncontrollable movement of the tongue, which started as a result of a half an hour of hyperventilation that he did. So what I would say to people is, you know, there are an array of different breathing exercises, and treat breathing exercise the same as physical exercise. Physical exercise can range from going for a walk to sprinting. There are people who are suitable to sprinting, but there's people, they're better off just walking. And if you're new to breathing exercise, start off with the very gentle stuff. And if you're an older person, or if you have, you know, medical issues or health issues, don't go into the big stressor exercise. The stressor exercises, therefore, you're young, you're a healthy person. And even with that, I would say is do control doses of stress. Start off very, very small. Listen to your body. See how you feel with it. And it may not be a stressor exercise that you need. You might need to be learning an exercise to downregulate. So, you know, it's always about tailoring breathing exercises to suit you, but to listen to your body. And because something might be getting a lot of attention, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best. Because I would also say that there are breathing exercises for introverts. I'm an introvert, even though I talk for a living. I love my own space. I get tired in groups of people. And I love the inward exercises, light breathing, slow breathing, getting my attention out of the mind. I'm not really into the hyperventilation. So, whereas other people may, and I think there is an influence of personality as well in the exercise that you choose. Yeah. So what would I say is to summarize, dip your toes into the water, get your foundational breathing right first. And yeah, if you are embarking on stress or exercises, just go gently and see how you respond. And just bear in mind that yes, a stress can be good, but a stress is not necessarily good if the stress is not suitable for you.
Yeah, I mean he's extreme. He's extreme. We're looking to help the general public to add that piece of the puzzle to make them healthier. We're not really looking to teach extreme things at this point. I have a son who's an ex does extreme sports, and it's very nerve-wracking as a parent. So he's with hiking and ice climbing and all these crazy things and crazy skiing that he does. So I think for most of us, we want to do the walking first, and we don't want to do anything that's too dangerous. Well, Patrick, I want to thank you for joining me today. You're such a wealth of knowledge, and you're really helping people all over by teaching them this piece of the puzzle that people need, whether it's exercise, it's diet, it's nutrition, it's being in the sun, it's stress reduction. And now there's another piece of the puzzle that people need to know about. It's breathing. If people want to find out more about you or get in touch with you, how could they do it?
Yeah, so we have websites and we are on social media, even though I give out about social media, but love it or hate it, we have to be out there. So we have two main arms. One is Oxygen Advantage website, social media, and app, and books as well, The Breathing Cure. And the
And
other one,
make sure you pick up The Breathing Cure. It's a fantastic book. Even though there's 500 pages, it's fantastic. And it's really going to help anybody out there to help with that piece of the puzzle.
great, thank you. And we have Buteyko Clinic as well, based on the work of the Ukrainian doctor. So that's buteykoclinic.com and YouTube and Instagram as well. So yeah, so we're on social media. Follow us because we feed information there all the time. As soon as I see new studies, I kind of put short videos together and we put it out there too. So yeah.
And myotape.com.
Correct. Correct. Yes.
Well, thank you. You're really an amazing person. You're helping a lot of people, and I want to thank you for being on the Open Your Eyes podcast and helping so many of my listeners. Thank you so much, Patrick McEwen.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much, Dr. Galb. It's
Thank
great. Thank you.
you.
Your eyes and your vision are under attack, damaging blue light from the sun, your phone, your computer, your tablet, even light bulbs and car headlights is constantly bombarding you. The good news is our eyes actually already have a line of defense to counter the effects of blue light. This defense is made up of three pigments called carotenoids. MacuHealth with Micromycel, the only supplement with the exclusive patent on all three macular carotenoids and Micromycel technology.
Fitting multifocal contact lenses presents a big opportunity to meet patient needs while growing your practice. Alcon is your partner not only with our innovative portfolio, but through e-learning. Learn to enhance your multifocal strategy today with the Alcon Experience Academy.
OIE Broadcasting is the emerging leader in social media. We use scientific entertainment to drive more patients into your office. Visit oiebroadcasting.com and sign up today.